Hello and welcome back to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity and mental health. Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we continue on the mini-series on ending violence against women. And this episode is about family domestic violence and the workplace and how they intersect. I've brought in Laurie from White Ribbon Australia. How are you, Laurie?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. Now, Laurie is a senior workplace program specialist at White Ribbon Australia, responsible for managing the workplace accreditation program, where she partners with workplaces to provide internal audits of policies, procedures, and culture in relation to women's safety and gender equality. Laurie has worked with family and domestic violence in the sector for over 10 years, working directly with perpetrators through the facilitation of men's behavioural change programs, as well as victim survivors via counselling case management services. She's also developed and delivered various programs in aid of reducing violence against women and children, including a bespoke fathering program for men who use violence and a support and healing program for women and children who have escaped violence. And Laurie, would you mind giving a brief overview about White Ribbon Australia, just for anyone who doesn't know who they are and what they do?
Yeah, absolutely. So White Ribbon is actually a social global movement. So we're set up to help end men's violence against women. So White Ribbon engages men and boys to see this violence as their problem to fix and not women's problem to tolerate. So through our programs and campaigns, we engage with men and boys to be part of the solution, not the problem, by becoming an active part of the social change. We want them to see just how helpful they can be in putting a stop to violence against women for good.
I love that. You're right.
Me too.
That was a really powerful, I don't know who has come up with that as a couple of key sentences, but amazing.
Yeah. And that's why I love working for White Ribbon so much, is because we're actually engaging men and boys. And if we don't get their engagement, we can't do as much change. So we need them to help and advocate as well.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. I love that. I've got two boys, and definitely after this mini series, I have been right on top of them in terms of accepting responsibility, taking ownership. What did you do to create that? Because you can just see that skills gap.
Yes, I love that. It's so important when you're raising boys.
It is. It is. I've got one that doesn't like to admit that he's wrong. And now it's like every day I make sure that he takes ownership, and it's probably too far, but you start seeing it and I think that is such a large part that is overlooked. I hadn't thought of before I did this mini series.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you're so right. Getting them to take accountability for things. You know, these are the things we need to embed in our children, isn't it? That we all need to take accountability for our actions. And what are we going to do about those?
Yeah, well, the victim survivors certainly have a flavour to the recipe, and a lot of it is around the perpetrator not accepting responsibility, taking ownership and apologising. So I've probably taken that too far in the parenting of my two boys, but I can see the flavour that is there, and it's really scary, actually.
Yes, I can imagine. I've got two girls, so it's a different type of challenge.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It heavily impacts regardless.
Absolutely.
So in regards to the workplace, people probably don't see them as family domestic violence and workplace would even be in the same sentence. Can you explain firstly just why it's important for a workplace to address family and domestic violence?
Yeah, workplaces play a really, really important role in the prevention and response to family violence. So the reasons for this is because it provides a safe and supportive working environment for all employees. For some women, work is their safe haven, so it's a place away from the abuse that's happening at home. However, we do know that the abuse can also creep into the workplace by the victim being bombarded with calls, for instance, from the perpetrator, or the perpetrator turning up to work. And this can cause a lot of stress, not only on the victim, but all the other employees that have been impacted as well. We also know that family and domestic violence is a workplace and economic issue. So violence against women and their children actually costs Australian businesses something like $1.9 billion a year. And $860 million of that is actually directly related to, you know, absenteeism of those experiencing that violence. And that's because people experiencing violence, you know, may have regular absences because, you know, they're experiencing the violence at home, their productivity decreases, they may even eventually resign. So this does have a cost to businesses who could otherwise put that money and support into helping people in the workplace and how to retain those people in the workplace. It's also really important to remember that employers do have a duty to provide safe workplaces. So under workplace health and safety laws, employers have a duty of care to eliminate or minimise as much as possible any risk that an employee may be exposed to. So it's important also that they're mindful of these duties that they do apply, not only to the physical workplace, but when employees work from home as well. And we know now, post-COVID, lots of people actually do work more from home too. So workplaces can make a massive difference, and many of the impacts of the perpetrator's violence and abuse can be mitigated by supportive workplace processes and responses. As a regular place of engagement, workplaces are likely to be a site where indicators of domestic and family violence are first visible, for instance. Effective processes and policies can encourage and enable employees experiencing domestic and family violence to seek support and assistance if and when they choose to do so. And economic independence and connection to a workplace can be key factors in enabling a person experiencing abuse to leave and manage the impacts of that relationship. So really important.
How prevalent would family and domestic violence be in the workforce, you know, and what impact would it have on well-being, job performance? Like, what are we seeing here? What's the scale of the problem?
Yeah, so Safe and Equal have some statistics. They say that between 55% and 70% of women who have experienced violence or are experiencing violence are currently in the workforce. So that's a huge percent. So around one in six women workers. Yeah. So workplaces are increasingly being recognised as places for people experiencing family and domestic violence to seek support. So they can be part of the solution. So how you might do that is, you know, policies that are meaningfully embedded with staff training and engagement. These things can all lead to safer and more productive outcomes. And it's important that all workplaces access specialist expertise early so that they can be equipped to respond safely. You know, at White Ribbon Australia, for instance, we offer workplaces really comprehensive training on how to prevent, recognise, respond and refer employees experiencing and or using, in fact, family and domestic violence. We train staff on how to deal with disclosures and how to support these people at work. You know, this could even include offering them family violence leave, which every staff member is entitled to. And it can, you know, involve temporarily reducing their workload, giving them extra time off for appointments and things like that. We do know that a person's performance in the workplace can be greatly impacted if they're experiencing domestic violence. So, you know, they might turn up late or leave early on a regular basis. They may have many sick days. Stress, depression, anxiety can cause them to be able to perform their duties, you know, not as effectively as possibly before. But this can also put stress on other work colleagues who might be picking up the slack as well. And we also see maybe withdrawal from colleagues. They may have mood changes or appear anxious. These are all signs as well.
So how can employers create a safe and supportive environment that encourages employees to disclose family and domestic violence if they need to?
Yeah, so having family violence prevention embedded in all policies and processes within the workplaces is crucial. Having functions such as the Employee Assistance Program, or EAP as it's is known as, available, but also to promote the availability of that. And also the awareness of the family violence leave is really important. You know, embedding things like developing a zero tolerance to gender-based harassment in the workplace, and constantly encouraging that gender-safe work culture. It has to come from the top and trickle down. That's key. So it can be achieved by building diversity and inclusion in teams, workplace training, as I said, top-down approaches such as gender equality or gender pay gap evaluation. We do know that violence against women is because of that gender inequality. So addressing that in the workplace is really important as well. At White Ribbon Australia, we do also offer a really comprehensive workplace accreditation program. So we work directly with organisations to ensure they're committed to creating this environment where women feel safe at work. You know, and men feel empowered to speak up if something doesn't seem right as well. So we partner with workplaces to provide internal audits, for instance, of their policies and procedures in relation to women's safety and gender equality, as well as training people leaders on what to do if they do have these disclosures. So workplace practices reflect the organisation's ethos. So from discrimination and harassment to social media policies, staff code of conduct. Every structure put into place can help promote equality and reduce violence against women, which inevitably encourages an environment where women do feel safe to disclose should they choose to.
Great, great. And that so needs to happen. So let's say somebody listens to this episode and decides to disclose at work.
Yeah.
What are the steps that a workplace need to take to respond appropriately?
So the simplest model to abide by, I think, is the respect, respond, refer. So when you receive a disclosure, you respect the person's privacy and their position and what's happening to them. You respond by validating what you hear and what they want to do next. So put them at the forefront. What do they want to do? Then you can refer, and it can be referral to internal or external supports. So internal might include, you know, HR or the legal department if that's something that's in that organization to discuss their rights. External to gain specialized support through a range of services. But it's really important that this is done at the pace of the person experiencing violence and never on their behalf.
So you don't take it out of their hands and scoop them up and do things for them.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. You make sure that it's at their pace and that it's actually what they want to do. They might not be ready. It's tempting, yeah, okay. Isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. I was just kind of thinking if something was disclosed to me, I think I'd be tempted to rescue. But that's not always, going to be the most helpful.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a very common thing. We do as humans, we want to rescue others. That's our nature. But at their pace and how they want to do it is really important.
A good point. So how should HR departments or a manager or, you know, an owner of a small business handle the disclosure to make sure that the employee feels safe and supported both emotionally and practically? That's a hard thing, I would imagine, to do.
It is, and that's why training is really, really crucial. If you're not trained in this, it would be quite hard, I think, to do it successfully, as much compassion as you might have. And there are techniques and skills that assist people with handling disclosures. You know, feeling confident in guiding a conversation is a simple way to skill up. You can contact organizations like us, for instance, to organize that internal training and to ensure those leaders and HR staff know exactly what to do if they're faced with a disclosure. There can also be a workplace safety plan. This is a workplace specific plan to be created for that person. So it can be, you know, how can the organization support that person within the workplace, for instance, offering them that leave, you know, giving them time if they need extra time off, things like that.
And what kind of support services should the workplace have in place for employees who disclose?
So all employees are entitled to 10 days of paid family and domestic violence leave each year. Whether you're full-time, part-time, casual, you're all entitled to that leave, and it must be offered and made visible. What we've recently discovered through a study, Flinders University, they found that many employees were not even aware that this leave existed, which is why it's so crucial that it's promoted throughout the organization. So is it put on intranets, for instance? Is it offered by people leaders when people come to them saying that things have happened? Is it actually promoted? Because the study also showed that when it was being used, when it was being taken up, it was used really effectively to support women experiencing violence. You know, they were using it for attending important meetings with support services, for instance. The other key support, as I mentioned before, is the Employee Assistance Program, or the EAP, that offers all staff counselling. Often there's people trained in family and domestic violence as well. So it's good to ask for those particular people. And it's free, of course, because your organisation pays for a certain number of those. Also, keeping in mind vicarious trauma for those who have received disclosures, how to support those staff members as well. So I'd recommend including support service numbers on the company's intranet, even having posters around the workplace. I've seen in some workplaces, in bathrooms, for instance, they've got posters where they've listed, you know, family and domestic violence support services. It's a discreet way to do it, you know, for people who may or may not eventually disclose.
It's really interesting that that's not advertised, because I don't know, but I would imagine, like, I've owned a couple of different businesses and I've never advertised anything like that. However, they've been very small businesses too. But I think I would have an idea in my mind, we don't have that here. That's not applicable.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what I would be thinking. And definitely that wouldn't be the case from the amount of prevalence that there is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that maybe as a barrier with the workplaces, or what is it that they're not advertising it, do you think?
Yeah, I think sometimes maybe leaders are not necessarily understanding 100% what it's used for. They might be thinking that it's more extreme cases, for instance, whereas it can be used for all sorts of coercive control, any sort of emotional abuse that they're experiencing, all sorts of reasons they can access that leave. And so sometimes I think it's a lack of understanding about what family violence actually encompasses and what that means. And I think people just probably haven't been properly trained in what it is, and they don't understand the policies. So that's why really understanding those policies for managers and how they can help support people with those policies is a really great thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I've worked in mental health for over 20 years, and I'd say that I'm very across women's health and women's issues, I would have said. However, this mini series has blown my mind in so many different areas. So I think that lack of awareness around what it is and how prevalent it really is would be a real barrier in terms of workplaces, because I don't think I've ever seen a workplace poster in any office I've ever been to.
No.
But they need to be there, because as you said, when the woman's like, okay, well, I need to go to the library and do some research, or I need to go to an appointment, I need to go to mediation, well, they can't take off time off work.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the barrier, that's so easy to solve, isn't it? If that's the only barrier to the mediation is you can't take a day off work, you know, that's so silly that if there isn't that support being advertised, it's there.
Yeah. And I think it comes down to lack of training on what that is and how to offer that to people. Yeah, absolutely. 10 days is a lot of time to get your ducks in a row. Yeah.
Absolutely. If you took some off for mental health, some off for planning, some off for executing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. So let's say if someone's listened to this and they think, gee, I think my workplace would be great, I'd love to suggest some training. How would they go about that?
Well, of course, you can come to us at White Ribbon by just going to whiteribbon.org.au on the website. There are other organisations, of course, that offer similar training. So you can just, you know, Google in your local area if you want face-to-face as well. We offer online training as well as face-to-face, so we can capture everybody across Australia if needed.
What are some of the reasons why individuals might feel hesitant to disclose family domestic violence to their employer or to their colleagues?
People might feel like their employer will respond negatively or be judgmental. They might think that they're going to share personal information with others in the organisation. Being unsure of how people will react is also a key factor to non-disclosure, which is why it's important that workplaces continue to build those safe and encouraging cultures. They could think their career or job could be impacted by the disclosure, that managers may not believe that they won't be able to perform their duties in the same way. They may also feel ashamed and that it's a personal matter and something to hide. And then the fear of not being believed is very real too. You see that play out everywhere, including the workplace, so that they might think they're making a big deal out of nothing. They're not going to be believed. So making her feel validated when she discloses is key.
And that would require training.
And that would require training. Yeah. Yeah.
It would. And people have a lack of understanding of what to say. Is that skills gap? You know, whereas what you're talking about is validating someone's experience in that such a vulnerable moment. And I feel like most people would require training.
Yeah, that's right. Because as we were saying before, people want to jump in and fix the problem, but that's actually not what they're there for. They're there to hear, to validate, to listen, to support. That's their role.
Yeah. And sometimes it can be their own uncomfortableness.
Mm.
You know, I felt a bit controlled once, and it's like, you have time to share your own experience and make it okay. But I feel like sometimes in those moments, there's a feeling from the person listening to make it okay for the other.
Yes, we all do it, don't we?
Yeah, like, you know, don't worry, it's okay. It's like, that's not needed here.
No, not helpful. Not helpful.
No. Not helpful. And I think I really love the way that you said, I think it was this episode or maybe the one before, where you said that violence against women is about inequality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we've done a workplace episode in this mini series, and we heard from a man who stood up for women and a woman herself. And I noticed in the workplace episode, and the inequality across genders in the workplace was so much more pronounced than I realized. And we spend so much time at work. So this is such an important episode. But thank you so much for your time, Laurie.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums Podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.